could you imagine like a kind of woke Muskism in which a much more tech-friendly, deregulationist kind of successor Democratic leader comes in and does what Trump has been doing with the Silicon Valley sector, but with perhaps more coordination and planning and actually providing the carrot of industrial policy as well as the stick of tariffs? I don't only think that's possible. I think that's probably what the president is going to look like, right? I think we're going to get strong AI abolitionist left populist backlash, or we are going to get like an abundancist progressive Muskism.
Oh my God. China's got a lot of goals in the world, Ezra, but one of them is not spreading authoritarian Marxism, okay? They're trying to spread Muskism, not Marxism. That's the game they're trying to beat us at. They're trying to beat us at our game, not Karl Marx's game. And we need to understand that and be serious about it. That was New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman to Ezra Klein in April 2025. 2 months after that, Elon Musk announced he was forming a new political party, the America Party, after falling out with Donald Trump, leaving the administration and criticizing Trump's tax and spending plans. But just the following month, in August 2025, Musk shelved the plans to launch the party. It now no longer has its own Wikipedia page, but back when it did, the page helpfully listed the party's ideology as Muskism. Earlier iterations also cited neoliberalism, libertarianism, economic nationalism, and right-wing populism. Now, I think that's all straightforward enough, but does a man whose views have mostly been propounded through a barrage of tweets deserve his own ism? A new book, Muskism, A Guide for the Perplexed, suggests that yes, he does. But instead of treating Elon Musk as an individual, the book suggests that instead we ask, what is Musk a symptom of? Think of it less as you would Marxism and more like you would Fordism. Elon Musk emerges then as an avatar of a worldview. Hello, I'm Alex Hochuli in São Paulo, Brazil. This is BungaCast, the global politics podcast at the end of the end of history. And I'm joined today by my co-host, Alex Gurevich in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hello, Alex.
How's it going?
Very well. And now you'll find that our guests today are all maybe in the same place as Alex Gurevich, which makes it slightly awkward that we're doing all this kind of virtually. But I'd like to welcome on to the podcast for the first time, Ben Tarnoff, a tech writer. And if he cares to mention any other accreditations, he's very welcome to do so. Hello, Ben. Great to have you on.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And we have back onto the podcast for a third appearance, Quinn Slobodian, whom I forgot to ask how he'd like to be introduced before we started recording. So I'll ask Quinn to do himself.
Sure. I'm a professor of international history at Boston University and the writer of books.
Right. And we're here to talk about this very intriguing book, which I had a great joy in reading, Muskism, A Guide for the Perplexed. So to get started, Ben and Quinn, the first sentence of the book, and I swear I've read beyond that all the way to the end, but I will start with the first sentence. It notes that everyone has an opinion about Elon Musk. And I, for one, thought he was a bit of a chancer until I started listening to some business podcasts to try to understand whether he was actually good and maybe exceptionally good at what he does. I'm not going to reveal what I think of him, but I did want to ask Quinn and Ben, and actually Alex Gurevich as well, what your view was of Musk before starting on this research project, or before you started to look more deeply into Elon Musk as a person. Did you think of him as a total genius and then were disabused of that idea as you researched into him? Or did you think he was a total chancer and charlatan, but then found out that actually, you know, he might have something to him?
Yeah, it's a good question. I personally think I've always sidestepped the question of whether Musk is a genius or not. I just feel like it's not a very interesting category of analysis. I would say that at the outset of the project, I certainly thought about Musk in more psychological terms, which I think is a very familiar mode when thinking about Musk. And there's, I think, abundant reason to do so. I mean, the man had a difficult childhood, et cetera, et cetera. But that was a kind of style of thinking that I was probably a little bit more comfortable with in trying to explain his behavior. Whereas the real pleasure and revelation of undertaking this project with Quinn was finding this more structural perspective on Musk. It doesn't displace the psychological or psychoanalysis, although it's not a thread we really pursue in the book, but coming to understand Musk as someone who is formed through the political economic currents of the last several decades and who has in turn formed those currents was, for me, very clarifying in trying to account for not only his behavior, but what he represents more broadly.
Quinn?
Yeah, I think me and Ben kind of had the same route into the book too, which was we both wrote pretty chunky reviews of the Isaacson biography. And I know that before either of us did that, we would occasionally make kind of comments to each other because we have been friends for years that were, you know, hovering, the finger was hovering over the mute button with even the word Musk, right? He felt like somehow a colossal distraction from the things that one should be paying attention to, and that the kind of oversized aura and real estate that he inhabited in the global and American psyche was ill-earned and, you know, a malign force somehow for any kind of political enlightenment project or whatever. So I think it was really the experience of reviewing that book and finding it to be much more interesting than perhaps I expected it to be, especially around questions of production, basically. I think we both kind of got enamored in certain ways with the way that he had been able to anticipate and rethink forms of supply chain management, the creation of kind of national champion style sectors like the auto sector in multiple places at once. So how can this man be a kind of vehicle literally for a kind of deglobalization in three parts of the world at once? Isn't that a contradiction? And that capacity he had to mostly kind of intuitively or, you know, contingently take advantage of shifting winds in policy world and in kind of the global economic zeitgeist became something that really felt worth spending more time on. And as someone not a small part of this was as someone who has spent my career writing about things that few people have any opinions on. You know, being able to write about someone who everyone from like my grandmother to the Uber driver would have a knee-jerk take on was just like a far cry from working on like Wilhelm Rupke and like at best Friedrich Hayek, right? I mean,
I'm sure it was greatly enjoyable not having to read these dusty old tomes and instead just read loads and loads of tweets as a process of research.
You have read his tweets, right? The word enjoyable is not one word I would attach to that experience. But yeah, it was a different methodology, let's say.
Yeah. Alex, I mean, I do have to ask you as well. You know, what was your opinion of Musk? Maybe even, you know, before he bought Twitter, before we got so much Musk in our lives, wanting to or not.
I think I first started thinking about Musk when he became a little bit of a like sort of elite liberal darling, the guy making electrical cars, saving us from climate change. And I found that puzzling. I couldn't figure out quite why liberals liked him so much. And then I started to really, but then I still didn't pay him much mind. And then I started thinking a lot more about entrepreneurship and the culture and cult around entrepreneurs. And that got me thinking a lot more about Musk and helped crystallize for me what I thought was so kind of dark and sinister about him that I thought mainstream liberal opinion was missing. And that he, on the one hand, seems to kind of represent the way in which the neoliberal order has given way to a neo-Schumpeterian one, in which the kind of abstract impersonal discipline of the market in which nobody has any special price setting power has given way to these sort of titanic monopolists and oligarchs seem to set not just prices, but laws, regulatory standards, things that Ben and Quinn talk a lot about in the book. And then, but the last thought I ended up having about him after thinking about him in those terms as someone really representative of the age is the one way in which he seems a little bit of a departure. And I imagine we'll get into this, which is that there's this weird way in which he's an old school industrialist. Unlike a lot of the other kind of entrepreneurs or whoever they think they are, who are looking to make a fast buck with